When you do your online shopping at Amazon.com, you'll never miss the mark and accidentally send a package to your neighbor's house. That's why you get the best deals with everything you buy on Amazon.com. So help support Rob Has a Podcast whenever you start your shopping with our links, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, use a link, robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA.
Though Steven is not around, you still have to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor, no it owes.
Yeah, that's right. We are live here. It's 9:15 p.m. Eastern Time, baby. Survivor Know-It-Alls ready to talk about everything that happened here in episode number 5. And here's the man who's always on target. It is Josh Wiggler.
Stay on target.
Stay on target.
Stay on target.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Josh, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic. Really enjoyed that episode of Survivor. Very happy to talk about that. I was bummed last week with the Varner exit, and it's nothing against Monica Padilla, but I thought that this was a fun episode of the show, so I'm excited to talk about it. I think there was a lot of funny moments tonight, some interesting strategic stuff. There's going to be a lot to unpack.
Yeah, it was really a surprising episode for me tonight because I really felt like all week long, okay, Angkor is going to tribal council. Angkor is going to tribal council. But, you know, as you and I did the evolution of strategy for chapter 30 of Survivor in Survivor Worlds Apart, we got to this challenge. And this was a challenge that originally happened after the lopsided swap, which Max Dawson called like reminiscent of the new Monono tribe. And when we recorded that, I said, I really like this tribe post-swap, especially when it's lopsided, because it's not necessarily a challenge that you are really held back by having a team that's not very athletic. And sure enough, the team that's shorthanded ends up being the winners here tonight and winning this slingshot challenge and overcoming the odds and avoiding tribal council for the first time since their existence.
Yeah, the peasants beat the Greek gods. It was good.
Finally.
Too many One World references this early on. But I mean, there was a physical component to it. You know, there was like the rope bridge that you got across and all of that stuff. So there was a physical component to it. So it's not just like anyone can win this one. But good for Angkor. You know, I was getting tired of seeing Angkor go to tribal council. I was tired of seeing Abby go to tribal council every single week. And it's Abby Maria's birthday today, so it's nice for her to have the night off.
Happy birthday, Abby Maria. Just as Marty McFly predicted, Abby Maria's birthday today. Wow.
Yeah. Did Marty McFly predict this Cubs performance, though?
I mean, I don't know. Hey, Marty, to be fair, Marty McFly didn't predict anything. He just went and experienced a bunch of things. But here we are, Josh. It is the future is now. We're ready to talk about it here on Survivor Know-It-All. So very excited to be here with you after episode number 5 of Survivor Cambodia. We got the chat room going on here on robhasawebsite.com. We're going to be taking your tweets later on tonight. Hashtag RHAP, and then on our YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. Tomorrow, we'll be speaking with the latest player voted out, the blindsided one herself, Monica Padilla.
Monica.
So it was a tough night for Monica.
It was a tough night for Monica.
But as a former resident of Queens, with baseball proclivities similar to mine, maybe it'll be end up being a bittersweet night for Monica after all, but a tough episode for Monica Padilla. And so we will talk with her tomorrow. I'll speak to her on the podcast. Josh Wiggler, of course, will speak to her for parade.com. You could read Josh's interview with her at robhasawebsite.com/parade.
That's correct.
And then I'll be doing the big recap podcast. Very excited about tomorrow's show because I'll be speaking with one of the left out 11. The great T-Bird Cooper will be my guest on the recap podcast. We've been doing some good shows on the recaps this season. And then we'll be getting into your voicemails with my good friend and co-host of my Seinfeld recap on post-show recaps. Akiva Winokur will join us.
Great.
And I'm excited to talk with him and get your voicemail. So get those in robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. All right, Josh, I was very excited tonight because I really thought this buy-on Tribal Council got my juices going on a number of different levels. First off,
give me some of those levels. How many levels? Like five levels?
Like 10 levels. 10 levels. You know I love a good 3-2-1.
And yeah, I know really, you love a great 3-2-1. That was a great 3-2-1.
It was a great 3-2-1. I was, for the first time this season, I was very proud of Stephen Fishback. I thought he did a great job. I'd like to think that
highs and lows for the fish tonight.
Yeah, highs and lows for the Tribal Council and the vote. I thought a really strong job by Stephen tonight. I'd like to think that all of these things that we've talked about here have had some impact in his thinking. And so great job by him. Great job by Jeremy. But I guess let's start off with the emergence of Kimmy Kappenberg, the gangster Kappenberg, and really tonight, we saw a side of Kimmy that we've never seen before in Survivor, Josh. And you and I both podcast about the final season together of the Sons of Anarchy. And Kimmy Kappenberg told us both separately that she's a big fan of the Gemma Morrow Teller character, which was really the main female lead on the show, played by Katie Sagal.
The Lady Macbeth of Charming California.
And she said she wanted to come into this game and play that strategy. And here she was as the one tough lady who wants to be surrounded by an alliance of the men. Did you think that Kimmy Kappenberg has taken the first step to making that dream a reality?
It was gangster. It was really badass on Kimmy's part. I think that even more than wanting to be surrounded by the strong men, I think it was very Gemma-like in terms of this is for the family. Anything for the family. If you go against the family, I'll stick a fork in your head. And she wanted to protect Bayonne. Monica is talking about other plans outside of Bayonne, plans that involve having a numbers advantage with women over men. And that kind of talk is not sitting well with someone like Kimmy, who is loyal to Magenta. She wants to be in with Magenta Bayonne, and that's where she is right now. Monica is talking about trashing the family, so Monica is the one who's going to get trashed in Kimmy's eyes. I thought it was fun. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I really was impressed with Kimmy tonight, and really, she did a very good job of holding her tongue. You know that Australia Kimmy is going to get into a fight over the clams. And so I couldn't believe that we were having a fight on Survivor over eating the food versus not eating the food. And Kimmy's on the side of hey, let's eat all the food right now, right, as opposed to back in Australia when she's trying to preserve food.
Well, she could eat a worm. I don't know where clams fall into the Venn diagram. Is there an intersection there between the worm and the chicken? I don't know where it goes. I don't know where it falls.
We got to look at the Venn diagram.
But we'll look at that.
For Monica,
clam diagram.
It was a rough night. Let's start with Clammergate.
Well, it was a rough night, but it was also a great night because she was finally on television. That was good.
Yeah, she was finally on the show.
Nice to hear from Monica. But I think the moment that she started talking so much in the beginning of the episode, it's like, okay, we're in trouble.
Yeah, last week's show, I think, was the beginning of the end for her when she started talking about how I don't trust Spencer. We got to worry about Spencer. And Spencer is being shown in a very positive light here on Bayonne. And you felt like that was a little bit wonky. Again, we talked about how they went to the act break on Monica talking last week. So it was definitely some bad foreshadowing for her. But in terms of the clam issue, we've talked about this so much on Survivor, and especially back in Survivor San Juan del Sur. If the choice is eat the food versus preserve the food, haven't we established now in Survivor you always eat now? Isn't it carpe diem when it comes to your food source on Survivor?
I think so, and especially when it's it's not your bag of beans, it's not your bag of rice, it's the ocean's supply of food. Take what you can get, right? Isn't that kind of like the all-you-can-eat buffet of Survivor?
You would think so. I mean, and even if you did eat all the clams in the ocean, couldn't you just go and then trade your tarp to the ocean for more clams once you eat all of them? Isn't
yeah,
that how that works?
So. I think Drew Christie taught us that that's the case.
If Drew Christie taught us anything, isn't it that?
Jeff, I'll trade you this clam. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that.
I'll trade the ocean for all of our clams.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that anyone could eat the whole ocean supply of clams. That seems like a really big ask. I don't think that anyone's going to do that.
Yeah, I couldn't really even tell what was Monica saying from an environmental point of view that we shouldn't eat all the clams in the ocean. But
maybe
I really
she was thinking that she was bonding with Kimmy in terms of like, let's protect the animals. Let's protect the clams. Do we have to eat all of the clams?
I don't
maybe
really
was,
know.
Maybe it was very shrewd. Maybe it was a shrewd attempt.
Perhaps. But
Probably not.
It seemed like what she was saying was, hey, we've got 39 days here. Let's not eat all the clams because we have to make this last for another, 30 days. And so just let's leave the clams here. But I think that, we don't need to beat this dead horse of, when the...
Or this dead clam either. Yeah.
Or the dead clam. You know, as Kimmy said, a clam in the hand is worth two in the bush. And so for Kimmy, I think she's got the right idea of eat now, stay strong. You never know what's going to happen. There could be a swap. There could be a merge. You could go live at the KO. And so eat the food that's around when you have the opportunity to do so, because you never know what tomorrow brings on Survivor.
100%. I'm Team Kimmy on that, and on many issues. I'm Team Kimmy all the way on that one. I think that that was the way to go. I think that to say, let's save some of these clams for later seems a little ridiculous.
Okay. What about in terms of the strategy that Monica was trying to do? What's best for Monica? In terms of the strategy, would it have been better to go along with this idea of, hey, let's vote off Kelly? I'm assuming that it was going to be Kelly and not Spencer. Let's all just vote off Kelly together. Or would that have been very short-sighted for Monica?
I think that she wanted to keep Wiggles, right? She wanted to keep Wiggles and get rid of Spencer.
Yes. But ultimately, who did she vote for? I thought that it was in the 3-2-1. I think she voted for Kelly Wiggles.
She did vote for Wiggles. She did vote for Wiggles. And I think that that was her move to stick with Bayon. That was the ruling on the field. Jeremy says, no, we're going for Wiggles. Let's go for Wiggles. She's going to vote for Kelly. I think that she was feeling out Kimmy to see, would you be willing to vote for Spencer? Would you come to me and make a pitch to vote for Spencer tonight? Obviously, that failed. She did not understand the magnitude with which that failed. But I think that she gave up that idea once it became clear that Jeremy and Steven and Kimmy were going to be voting for Kelly. But I think that, if she'd had her druthers, the women would stay strong, and she wants to keep that intact. She wants to see, she sees, certainly if you were living on Bayon, you'd have to be blind not to notice that Keith, Jeremy, Joe, and Savage, those were guys that were alpha males. They were strong, and Bayon has been huge in this game. Bayon is going to tribal council tonight for the first time in the entire game, and it seems like a Takeo should go home. So those Bayon numbers are going to be strong. So if you're Monica, maybe you do want to keep your options open with having a strong numerical advantage for some women, or at least making it skewed towards your advantage. It wouldn't be a huge numbers advantage. So I see where she's coming from with that. I can't fault her for the thinking. I think she was talking to the wrong person. She was talking to someone who she didn't appreciate was as annoyed with her as she was.
Let's just go back to Survivor Samoa. Is there anything that we could take away from Survivor Samoa that Monica was thinking, boy, if we would have just kept the women together, that's what we should have done? Monica was tight with Laura Moret in that season. She was also tight with Kelly Charbaugh. So was there any thinking that Monica walked away from Samoa saying the women need to stick together? We got to avoid the bros broing down.
Right. Well, I don't know. I know that Monica, when I spoke with her before the game, I talked to her about her Samoa experience a little bit. And one of her regrets from that experience was the Shambo of it all, and really kind of alienating Shambo and not being able to preserve any kind of working relationship with Shambo. Shambo was very anti-Monica. Monica was anti-Shambo. She was annoyed by Shambo. She couldn't work with Shambo. I think that that was a big piece of Monica's takeaway from that she didn't want to rub anybody the wrong way. She didn't. And if she did have friction with certain people, she still wanted to find ways to work with these people. I think that, Kimmy Kappenberg and Shambo are not the same people, but they're both sort of, these loudmouth, big personalities in Survivor history. So I think that Monica was probably really working hard on that Kimmy relationship, would be my guess.
Okay. Now, what will be the reaction from the other people from the original Bayon? So when we go to our next reward challenge here in episode 6, we say, okay, let's bring out the new Bayon tribe. Monica voted out at the next at the latest tribal council. What will be the reaction from Andrew? What will be the reaction from Tasha? And what will be the reaction from the four Bayon members at the KO?
Who's Monica? That'll be number one. Number two will probably be, I think that Steven said something very smart when he was talking that through with Jeremy. He's expressing basically what you're driving at is, this is a message that we're sending. This is the first Bayonne blood on the field. We have an advantage here. We have four Bayonne. We have two Takeos. We have their number right now. We could just easily take out Spencer or Wigglesworth. What does this say to Savage? What does this say to the bonds that we created with those people? I don't feel like Monica, we didn't get the sense of where Monica really was in this game to begin with. We never saw her. I mean, we never saw her. You could stop there. But we didn't see much of her in terms of alliance building and where she factored into the Jeremy and Savage and Keith plan. So I don't know. I don't know that anyone is going to be really blown away by Monica being the one who's gone. It's not like if Jeremy was missing when Bayonne showed up to the next challenge. I don't think it's a huge, huge, huge loss. And the precedent is certainly set in terms of Takeo, which had a numbers advantage over at Angkor, getting rid of two of their own at this point already. So it's not, you know, it's not earth shattering. It's not a precedent setter. It is for Bayonne. But I feel like if it was somebody other than Monica, you know, if it was Jeremy, if it was Steven, I think that would be a different story. I think more jaws would be dropped. But I don't know. Do you think that people are going to be really floored to see Monica gone?
Well, it really depends on how big of a deal was Monica back at original Bayonne. Was she on the table as somebody potentially to vote out at right. Bayonne 1.0? Because if she was, then it's not that big of a deal. But if there's people that have her as somebody who's sort of like a key cog in their post-merge game, I think some people are going to be annoyed about that. I didn't get the sense that Monica was so instrumental in the bigger plans. Like, hypothetically speaking, if this was Tasha that was left at Bayonne and then Tasha was voted out, I think, you know, people like Andrew and Joe and Keith might have some questions to ask. But as far as Monica goes, I don't get the sense that she was really instrumental in the original Bayonne.
Yeah, I think that she was probably deemed expendable in the greater picture. And I think if you put it from Jeremy's perspective, who clearly has a thing going on with Fishback, has a working relationship with Kimmy. Those three were obviously very tight tonight. And in the early going of the season, we saw him very close with Savage and those guys and Joe. So Jeremy is really at the he's right in the hub of things. He's right in the
yes,
hub of things
like
as
Cassandra.
As far as the Bayonne politics goes. So if he's the guy who's saying this is okay to do, if he gives a green light to the Monica hit, you got to feel decent about him thinking that Savage isn't going to be furious about this, that they will still be able to salvage things with Savage when they meet up again. So I feel like it's okay. Do you think that this was the right play? Was it the right move to get rid of Monica here? Was what Monica doing so egregious that she should be the one to go over Kelly, over Spencer, over continuing to pummel Takeo into the ground? Was this the right call for Steven, Jeremy, and Kimmy?
It's a really interesting point, and it really comes down to, you know, what is the next step for all of these players? Because I think it was a very interesting move. Certainly, it was the best move for Kimmy, because Kimmy makes herself more of a key person in terms of there is the original Bayonne 3 now, and then there is Spencer, and then there is also Kelly Wigglesworth, and she is certainly ahead of those people. And so I think for Kimmy, this was a great move. And I think that maybe if you're going to give anybody a fishy for this, maybe it's Kimmy Kappenberg that deserves a fishy out of all this. Now,
what's your prediction? Who's fishy going to give the fishy to? Is Kimmy a contender?
I think that it really depends on what sort of the relationship did Kimmy and Steven end up having in the game. But I feel like based on what I saw, I think that Kimmy is the person who came off as the heavy hitter in this episode.
Would you have ever entered this season thinking that Kimmy Kappenberg would be even a nominee for a fishy?
Probably not. No, I was very impressed. And we saw almost nothing to sort of show that this was coming through the first 4 hours of this show. That's why it was so surprising to see it come out in spades tonight. Now, for Steven, in terms of this move and whether it was a good move or not, what I kind of like about it for Steven's perspective is that if anybody is mad, Steven can sort of say, like, it was Jeremy's idea. I just went along with what Jeremy wanted to do. So yeah. If he could sort of like wash his hands of any sort of like bad blood for this, you know, it'll be harder for Jeremy to sort of say like, hey, Steven and Kimmy wanted to do this. I had nothing to do with this. So like,
no one's going to buy that. Yeah, one's going to buy that Jeremy had to placate Steven and Kimmy. But I think Steven does have a little bit of plausible deniability, and it's not inauthentic. We saw him playing devil's advocate in the conversation with Jeremy. He was the one who was saying, what is this going to say to Savage? What does this say to these people? So he's thinking that through already. I actually really like this for Steven. And I really liked Steven outside of the challenge, which was very funny. I thought that this was a really good night for Steven. He said some really interesting stuff. I think that line was really great. Him talking at Tribal Council about how strategy is based on emotion and it is about the real bonds that you make. And I think that we're seeing Spencer talk about those ideas a lot on the show. And I think that we're seeing Steven understand that even more innately. So I thought that was a great showing from Steven. I think that this was good. Him strategizing with Jeremy, him talking this through with Jeremy. I really liked it. It would be nice if he knew about that immunity idol in Jeremy's pocket. He doesn't outside of that. I think that his relationship with Jeremy is really solid right now.
Now, the one person who I think that maybe I question this move for is Jeremy. Because if you're Jeremy and you're a big part of this, you know, previous buy-on majority, why do anything that's going to upset the apple cart? Is the Monica Padilla Women's Alliance thing, is that more real than a potential Kelly Wigglesworth return to Takeo? And doesn't Monica seem like she's a, I guess she seems like she's a sneakier player potentially than Kelly, but Monica seems like she's sneaky, but probably is baseline loyal to Bion, as opposed to Kelly, who is probably has no other options than to return to Takeo. Was that a better idea to vote out Monica, who it was going to vote with you, was a number for your side? Maybe down the road, she's going to switch and start a women's alliance with who, I guess, or Kelly, who undoubtedly is going to be like, hey, I'll go back to my other team. I really don't feel like I have a home with this tribe.
But what's there to go back to? What's there to go back to with Takeo? Takeo hasn't been completely decimated yet, but they're down severely. They have six original Takeo are still in the game. And one of those people is Abby Maria. One of those people is someone who is wildly unpredictable, and there's been no love lost between Wiggles and Abby Maria. So I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that Kelly is going home anywhere. Bayon might be her home at this point. She's put in a lot of work around camp, obviously. She's killing cockroaches. So maybe this is her new forever home. Maybe she wants to be in with the Bayon 5. I don't know. I do hear what you're saying about Jeremy, though. And I think what's interesting about Jeremy is he's been a great second in command for somebody like Savage, or at least that's a really good position for him to be, not the guy out in front, but to be right behind the guy out in front. That's a good spot for Jeremy. And I think now we're seeing him on Bayon. He's the godfather there. And we have Steven, who's his lieutenant there. And I don't think that he necessarily wants to be that shot caller who's making the aggressive move of, I'm going to take the shot on Monica, where maybe he should be presenting it as, I'm just doing what I would say, like when everyone can combine again. If he gets to have a conversation with Savage, he'd be like, I just took care of Kelly Wigglesworth because I figured that's what you would do. Something like that. So I do think that maybe Jeremy's putting himself a little bit out in front.
Well, let me present something else to you, because I kind of agree with you with what you're saying on Kelly Wigglesworth, because I do see her as almost like another woo that's sort of like, you know, she's probably just going to, if you tell her what to do, she's not going to go out there and be freelancing. But is Jeremy potentially guilty of taking the bait with Spencer? Do you think that it's possible that Jeremy is being conned by Spencer? And is Spencer potentially the more dangerous person, because he's definitely a guy who could potentially flip? And yes, he's certainly happy to be here on the Bayon group. But if Spencer has an opportunity to flip, you know that he will definitely move on to greener pastures. No Takeo pun intended. But right. Also, that he is a guy who could potentially, and again, with Joe in the mix, it's definitely, he's not the biggest immunity threat, but Spencer has demonstrated an uncanny ability in terms of these challenges. He seems to do well in almost everything.
On his head in awkward positions.
He also has three individual immunities under his belt. For Jeremy, would potentially the smarter move had to be say, hey, let's get rid of the biggest Takeo threat that's still here, and that's Spencer.
There's an interesting argument to that. And I think that there, you know, the loyalty card with Wigglesworth is worth weighing. And when it comes to Spencer, he is somebody who I think that you can just assume that that is a guy who's going to play ball with whoever is willing to play ball with him, as long as they don't yank the ball away. I think that Spencer is a guy who is, as Probe said, the epitome of a new school player. He is somebody who is willing to swing from alliance to alliance. I think that he's somebody who is much more interested in that aspect of the game and that sort of self-preservation instinct, and is a lot more flexible than Kelly. So, but it's, again, who does he have to go back to right now? There isn't an original Takeo. Shireen is gone. He was good with Wentworth, but Wentworth was part of that coalition that voted against Spencer and Shireen. So where is he going? So it's tough. I mean, it's not a straightforward vote at Bayon in terms of the choice between Wigglesworth and Spencer. I think it is maybe a little more straightforward in the choice of Monica versus those two as a package. And you just kind of have to arbitrarily pick ahead when it comes to Spencer and Wigglesworth. I think, you know, I do think that Spencer is a guy who will, he could tell you he's loyal, but if a better opportunity arises, he's going to be quicker to jump at that than someone like Kelly, who will say, I gave you my word, I'll stick to the word, even though it's going to burn me to the ground.
Yeah. I mean, don't you kind of see it a little bit starting to be kind of like the second fans versus favorites, where it's like, okay, well, now it's just like all a bunch of buy-on people, and then there's only going to be a couple of fan stragglers left from TKO, and then ultimately, like, where are they going to go? It's going to be, they're going to be sort of like the pawns in the second half of the game, where the buy-on players could be using them to sort of like this for this power struggle at buy-on.
I don't think it's that simple. I think that, I think we saw it with Takeo tonight. Maybe this is a segue. You know, when we saw the five of the six Takeo talking about forming a five strong alliance, it's the four Bayons who are over there plus Kelly Wentworth, and we could be a five. And if you look at the people on Bayon right now, that fivesome, I don't think that anybody's losing any sleep in that fivesome over Monica being sent home. I think that, you know, there's going to be questions that are emerging. Why didn't you include Spencer in the plan? Why didn't you tip off Wigglesworth? I don't know why you risk it when you have something locked down with that 3-2-1. I think that you can explain this to Spencer. I think Spencer's a fan of the show. He'll get it. He'll understand why he wasn't included in the vote. I think that that five Bayon and that five Takeo as they exist right now, plus Terry, I think that that could be an interesting thing. Those could be two interesting battering rams heading toward each other. And then it's the people over at Anchor. I don't really know where those people land. So I think it's less about the old Takeo and more about that foursome at Anchor right now. And where do they divvy up when all is said and done?
See, I think that's, I don't see it happening that way, but I think that that would be probably the most fun version of this season that we could see, where we end up with sort of a new buy-on versus new Takeo. Like, I just can't imagine that. I know Keith said he's excited to be in this group. Nobody ever tried to do anything with him before in this game. I kind of remember a couple of times where people did try to do stuff with Keith. But right, that being said, that would be very interesting. I think that that would be an extremely fun second half of this season to watch.
I think you got to take into account, why is Sierra, why do we have that Tyson-esque scene with Sierra at Takeo saying, this is our five, unless that's going to bear some fruit. So I feel like that could be the direction that we're going in. That would be really awesome. I would love to see that.
What did Terry Dietz do to get on the outs so bad over? Is it just the work of Kelly Wentworth in sort of kicking Terry under that bus? Kick.
He's just pinned. He's firmly under that bus. He can't pipe in. He can't speak up anymore. He's just too far underneath.
Does he seem to know it?
I think that they all said, basically, here's the deal. You know, let's keep Terry comfortable. That's what they were saying. Let's keep Terry comfortable. But if we have to go to tribal, he's the guy. He's the one that we'll get rid of. But if we don't go to tribal, and we have no reason to assume that we will because we're a badass super squad, then let's keep Terry tight. And I think that Terry's just the sixth in that six. I don't think it's like we hate Terry Dietz. I think that he's just the easy six. He's the one that we boot if in the worst case scenario.
Okay. All right. Now let's go over to Anchor, where we haven't talked much about tonight for the first time, but we end up seeing where there is this real power struggle between Wu and Abby Maria here tonight. And, you know, Wu has this really great scene where he's talking about everything that's going on with his mom and how she had a second chance after her heart surgery. And then Abby Maria has to try to... like out sympathy Woo. She's like, well, yeah, you know, my friend really has strep throat,
hard time,
yeah,
and my
neighbor is getting divorced, and it's just like you know, one thing after, she's even calling out Tasha, like why do you guys have to listen to his story?
I had to have a tooth pulled when I was younger.
Yeah,
you know, it's not really apples and apples in this situation with Wu. But I mean, I get the basic principle of, should you be worried about somebody milking a sob story for strategic benefit? I get being, you know, in tune with that and being in sync with that as a possible risk. But first off, I don't really see Wu pulling.
No, Wu's not doing
far.
That. Wu, that's not one of Wu's moves.
I don't think that's one of his moves. I don't think that that's in Wu's bag of tricks. So there's that piece of it. And then the other piece is just, you know, Abby, got to find something with everybody. It's really amazing. She just has this incredible ability to just unearth drama where there is none to be found. She just finds it inexplicably. She just like creates it out of thin air. It's really kind of a very striking talent.
She's really good. I mean,
really good.
If based on what you saw tonight, I'm starting to feel like if Anchor goes to this tribal again, Abby has to go.
Well, we talked about that last week. You know, I think that you and I both wholly expected that we would be doing a postmortem on either Wu or Abby tonight based on how things have been going. Angkor is in such dire straits. They managed to win tonight. That was fantastic for them, certainly, and for us, I think, as well. It was nice to have a break from that and see some of the dynamics at these other tribes. But I think you and I were talking about probably getting to be about time. It's getting to be about Abby time, hashtag Abby time, to get rid of Abby. You know, Tasha has a great relationship with Wu, has history with Wu, can control Wu. Tasha outlines it very, very well on the show tonight. She talks about how you give Wu those marching orders right before tribal council and he's cool. He's good. He'll do what you tell him to do. It takes every ounce of energy to work with Abby. Working with Abby is work. That's a paraphrase, but that's basically what she says. So yeah, I'm with you. I think if Angkor is going back to tribal, I think Abby's in huge trouble, and I think that's the right decision. I think that this is the right time. If Angkor has to go back, I think that they got to get rid of Abby. I think it's the only way to go right now. It's what makes the most sense.
I mean, for Tasha, the back pocket Wu is so huge because she went up against this guy. She was trying to flip things on Tony, and she knows that Wu is in lockstep with whoever gave him the order. It's sort of like one of these things in sports where you sort of like, okay, I went up against that person. I know what it's like. And now they're on my team and I know how good they are, because she knows how valuable that is to have him as her loyal person following her. So I think that Tasha is not throwing Wu. I'll be very surprised if Tasha throws Wu back under any circumstance.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's aligning with her pregame strategy. Her pregame strategy was, I want to surround myself with the really strong dudes. I want to get rid of as many women as possible before the merge. And when the merge hits, I want all of those guys to be shooting at each other, and I want to sneak underneath the bullets and get to the end. And if she keeps Wu over Abby, that's only feeding that plan that she had before the game even began. So I think in every single respect, it behooves Tasha to hang on to Wu, and I don't feel like that's a hard sell for Savage. So I think if Angkor goes back to tribal, it's going to be time's up for Abby time.
Let's just talk real quick, because people are going to want to make sure. I'm going to get it in the comments if we don't mention it. The immunity challenge, Steven hits the target for Angkor. Should that have counted, first of all?
I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Do you think that this would have been, is that unfair that that counted? I feel like the flag is raised. You're going to have to stop down the challenge, plug the flag back down. And I think that Survivor is all about what's great television. What's the better TV call? Is Steven scoring on Angkor and we're editing that out and rewinding that and replaying that? Is that better than letting Steven score on Angkor and having that count? Isn't that a great TV moment? So I think in the name of great TV, you let it lie.
Now, in fairness, I think there is a precedent of that when you've been in these challenges, like slingshot challenges, where it's like, okay, whoever breaks the most dishes, you know, there's a precedent there where if you hit somebody else's target, that counts. But isn't it a significant disadvantage for the team who happens to be in the middle there? And who was that? Was that Bion that was in the middle?
I believe that was Bion, yeah.
I mean, isn't that a big disadvantage? Because that if you go to your left or your right, you could potentially hit the targets for the other team.
It's a tough challenge to be the middle team for sure. I think, you know, when we're looking at that Worlds Apart version of this same challenge, you don't have a whole set of targets right in the middle of the thing. I mean, I'd have to look at the course again. It's been a minute, but I believe that they were spread out decently so that there's a little bit of an alley, so you're not just going to, you know, hit the other tribe's targets by mistake. You'd have to really be veering very wildly off the course in order for that to happen. So yeah, it's understandable. I mean, Steven's going to get made fun of for this. I think that most of it is in jest. I thought it was a really funny moment. It only endeared him more to me. I thought it was lovely. And I think it's also understandable. That was a really, you know, it's a really tough spot to be in. And it's a game of a few feet, if not inches, with those targets if you're that tribe position in the middle. So sucky spot to be in. Sometimes it's good to be the middle tribe, like for a puzzle, when you can like sneak over and look at the team that beat you and you can copy their thing, and the tribe that's next to you can't copy anything. That's a great time to be the middle tribe in a challenge. For something like this, it sucks. This is a bad break.
Well, you know what then? The next time we do it, I want to see, instead of like having each team have five in a row, each for their color, like put them all over the board. Like mix it up. So you're shooting at targets, but you have, because I think that was probably the most fun thing that happened in the challenge when Steven hit the one for the other team. So let's sort of like jumble the five targets all across the board.
Well, then it's just going to be a free for all. Like there's no talent.
And the problem
is, I guess.
Like a free-for-all. All right, let's get into some of these questions here tonight here on Survivor Know-It-Alls. And why don't we start off with Logan Rex, who wants to say, Rob, I think it's about time for you to stop talking up Steven's challenge prowess.
Well, this is the argument for why Steven's been hanging back on these challenges a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think I've said that would have liked to have him step up a little bit more again. I think that this is not necessarily something that he practiced at CrossFit before he went, of working with a giant slingshot. I don't know where, you can go to Battery Park and do that. Probably get arrested if you tried.
Yeah, I think so. No, I agree with you. I think he's been a really good sport about this one. His tweets tonight were hilarious.
Yeah. All right. What does Nick 2S have?
All right. This is Nick 2S. So far, neither of the tribes have voted based on the majorities of their first tribes. Is that a sign of the all-star cast or of the new school way of playing? That's an interesting question. We have seen, when Angkor has gone, even though there were four Takeos versus two Bayons, two Takeos have gone. And now that Bayon has gone, when they had a Bayon majority, a Bayon left. Is that reflective of the way that Survivor is now, or of the fact that this is a whole bunch of people who this isn't their first rodeo?
I think that it's probably both things. I mean, I think that Survivor is what it is. I don't think that this necessarily happens this quickly in Survivor in the first 10 seasons, where things are sort of changing on a dime like that, where people are so super paranoid about somebody like Monica going ahead and doing something different. So I also think it happens to be that these players are ready to play and ready to go. I mean, it's only what, day 11, 12, 13 of this past episode. So right. I think people are ready to go. And so we only had these people that were in these tribes for the first 8 days of the game. So I don't think it's necessarily that they have to be in lockstep. They weren't complete strangers that were with these tribes for 19 days. They're people that all knew each other ahead of time. And it's early on. They were only together for a week. So I'm not super surprised to see people. I was more surprised about what happened at Angkor in those first couple episodes after the swap than I was about what happened tonight.
Well, that was a meltdown. That was nuclear. Yeah. That was really unbelievable.
Okay, let's take another question here and let's check in with Daniel, who says, should Jeremy, Steven, and Kimmy have told Spencer to vote for Monica to solidify their bond with him? He seemed pretty shocked that it wasn't Kelly going. Now, Josh, if Corinne Kaplan was out there and they said that this was the plan, we're just going to vote our three, and then we'll sort of like let Spencer and Kelly know what's going on next. She would have said, no, we have to tell Spencer what's going on or he's not going to trust us later. Right. They did not do that. They said, okay, Spencer, don't worry. But I bet they probably also told Kelly, don't worry, we're going to vote out Spencer, and they voted out Monica. Now, did they do it right by them to say to both of them after, like, we got your back, don't worry about this? Or did they create distrust by not telling them the plan?
Well, who knows what they told Kelly? We saw Steven, we saw Jeremy, we saw them talking with Spencer, and they said, no, you're cool. And we saw Spencer, leaning on those three C's as much as he could, even though he said it was unnatural to be this calm and cool. He was very collective about the thing. So he if he wasn't feeling good, he was putting forth the aura of feeling good. Who knows what they said to Wiggles? I think that I get where they're coming from in terms of not telling Spencer and Kelly, because just who knows if they do tell them we're voting out Monica tonight, who knows what Spencer turns around? Who knows what Spencer goes and says if he pulls Monica and Wigglesworth together and goes to Fishback and says, now it's your chance to get rid of Jeremy. And then suddenly Jeremy is flipped over on something like this. Who knows? Just the safer outcome is to keep Spencer and Kelly out of this. Kelly seems to be, kind of whatever in terms of the game's mechanics anyway. And someone like Spencer, I feel like he'll respect the move enough that when all is said and done and they go back to tribal, that when they go back to camp that night, I think that he's going to say, oh man, I get it. Okay, that makes sense. I don't feel like he's going to feel completely in the dark over that. Do you disagree?
No, I don't think he's going to feel in the dark. I think that what they probably did was they said to Spencer, hey, Spencer, vote Kelly. Trust us on this. You vote Kelly tonight. And then Kelly, I think that they're not super worried about if she's feeling great or not. But then they could sort of say to her after the fact, like, we really feel like you're part of the tribe and we wanted to keep you around. And Monica, we didn't really trust her, so we're happy to have you guys here with us. And I feel like you guys are part of this new Bayon family more so. Now, is Kelly Wigglesworth going to necessarily buy that? Probably not. But where is she going? What is she doing? And for Spencer, I think he's definitely happy to be part of this team. And I think that Spencer Fishback bond is strong.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that there are, I don't think that this is catastrophic by any stretch of the imagination to not tell them this plan. I think it's potentially catastrophic to tell them the plan. And I think with someone like Spencer, at the very least, if not Kelly as well, I think you can smooth this over that very night as soon as you go back to Tribal and say, we like this five. We didn't tell you for this, 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 and this reason. It's got nothing to do with you guys. We were just making sure. I think you can smooth it over. I don't think that this is Apocalypse Now. I think that this was, I think it was the right call. I think it was the right call to leave them in the dark on this one. I think that's the beauty of the 3-2-1. You know, you gotta keep them in.
It's very fun. And then one other thing on just the Spencer-Steven bond, I think that's another reason why if I was Jeremy, I might think about maybe going for the Spencer thing. Although you run the risk that, you know, Steven could turn it around and with Spencer against Jeremy.
I think that's definitely a risk that you want to be thinking about. And I mean, Jeremy is no dummy. He was in the running for Mr. Survivor. He knows that Fishback and Spencer have that RHAP connection. So it's on his radar that these are two guys who are potentially buddies. So that's a good call. I think that there's a ton of reasons to keep them in the dark, and I don't see too many good reasons to include them in the plan.
Okay, let's keep going. More questions. Tim wants to know, is this the most satisfying exit to a basic non-entity that didn't have little to no confessionals in the previous episode? I think that's a little mean-spirited.
That's harsh. Way harsh, Tim. I don't know if it was satisfying to see Monica go. I like Monica. I really love Monica Padilla in Survivor Samoa. I think that she was underrated. I'm glad that she got the second chance. It didn't break her way. I was really hoping to see more from her this time. I was hoping to see anything from her outside of this episode. I don't know. What's your take? What's the postmortem on Monica? Because I know you were high on Monica as well. When you and I were recording the Evolution of Strategy, we were recording the Samoa chapter. You and I were both really taken, certainly with her final day in the game. What's your take on Monica now that Monica is out of the mix?
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed in Monica 2.0. Not that she made any horrific mistakes or had like a major gaffe in her time there, but I feel like Monica was somebody who was coming into this game. And I remember being at the Survivor after party following Worlds Apart, and I was, you know, having a drink with Jim Rice. And we said, okay, let's go ahead. Who's the winner of Survivor Cambodia? It's like 1, 2, 3, shoot, Monica.
Yes. Yeah.
And he said, okay, well, she's got that. She's going to be the person who's going to be under the radar. But what I started to hear from people like, you know, in sort of like the preseason interviews, and I'm not sure if you picked up on this when you were there, I felt like that I wasn't alone in sort of thinking that Monica was more dangerous than maybe the average person might have thought about her. And that there was a little bit of a vibe that maybe Monica is a little sneakier than perhaps her reputation had preceded her. And then I think that she was probably on people's radar, even though she didn't have a lot of screen time. I think that she was somebody that was always on the minds of these players, of that they were watching out for Monica.
Yeah, I think her invisibility made her visible, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. I think the fact that she was so far off the radar, definitely not a lock to make the cast to begin with. I think that when you look at a lot of all-star seasons in the past, or even half-stars, you know, seasons where there's a few returnees and a bunch of favorites, I think that oftentimes you do see that type of person who is not well remembered. You know, Amber was somebody who just like snuck out of nowhere and ends up winning this thing. Sandra can get loud too, what the F, but I don't think that people were looking at her as a huge major strategic threat going into Heroes Villains. And I think that this goes back to a question that we were tackling earlier about, is this a reflection of new school or is this a reflection of all-star players? I think that this is the reflection of an all-star season in the new school era, that maybe that game doesn't work anymore. Maybe that game of being that invisible player who comes into this and can be a little bit underrated because you're a bit forgotten in Survivor lore. You don't have necessarily the same obvious threat levels that some of these other players have. You want to get rid of, you know, when's the time to get rid of Joe? That was a question that was brought up on the show tonight. You know, those are the types of people that seem to be more firmly on the radar, but maybe being off the radar puts you firmly on the radar now. Maybe that is something that's coming out of this all-star season in a new school era. It's fascinating. It's
interesting. But that being said, was it a departure from that game where Monica ultimately got herself in trouble going to Kimmy and trying to sort of put the idea out there in people's heads? And we talked about this with, you know, with PG and even earlier this season with people like Shireen, in terms of if she just would have, whatever the plan was, to go full Sandra and say, okay, the vote tonight is for Kelly. I like that plan. And not right. be going around trying to start her own plans, which was this women's alliance. And let's try to keep our women strong, and floating that idea to Kimmy, who ultimately got the wheels in motion to get her out. Again, I don't know how much the clam stuff. I think it sort of speaks to the fact that she didn't get along great with Kimmy, which
right.
is sort of a, you know, an underrated part of, you know, making sure you get along with everybody. I'm sure as Cass's book collection can tell you. But sure. in terms of this idea of floating around this idea of the women's alliance, did that create ultimately the target on her back?
But do you think that that was such an egregious move? Do you think that what Monica said to Kimmy was such a disastrous thing for her to say that, you know, conventional thinking would have her lifted right out of the game after that? Or was it just the wrong thing to say to the wrong person?
I think it was probably more the second thing.
And I think that it relates to this next question from Tib Man 2, who says, do you think Kimmy made the right move in telling Stephen and Jeremy about Monica's all girls alliance plan? And for me, I just, you know, it felt like I get where Monica's coming from. I think we talked that through in terms of why you would want to keep Kelly over Spencer. I see that. And I think that for Monica, she just didn't rate how much Kimmy was really not into Monica. She did not like this neat lady. She was not a fan. Do you think that Kimmy made the right call? Do you think that this was good timing for Kimmy to throw Monica under the bus? You seem to think that this is great yes. for her stock in the game.
I think that Kimmy is like that Gemma Teller, where she's not going to be able to play her game with the women. She is going to be with these guys on her team, and whether they're the guys that are sort of in her of her own age, or the guys who are sort of like the younger guys, where she can be sort of, if not necessarily mom, but cool aunt to yeah. The, you know, the 22-year-old Spencer and people like that. I think that she is going to be somebody who's going to be able to play her game playing with the men this season, and not somebody who the women's alliance. It was pretty much, for Monica, probably the worst thing that you could say to Kimmy is, let's try to keep the women strong this season and do the girl power thing. Because to Kimmy, I don't think she's interested whatsoever in that.
Doesn't seem like it. Does not seem like it. Here's another question on the same topic from Tim Marzullo. They took a huge leap trusting Kimmy that Monica was deceptive. Why do you think they believed Kimmy so much? Well, I think that this is like the beautiful thing about Kimmy Kappenberg is you don't look at Kimmy and think that she's going to lie to you. Or if she is going to lie to you, you feel like you could probably figure that out fairly quickly, right? Kimmy kind of seems like she's going to be a straightforward survivor player.
A straight shooter, because she doesn't have that sort of idea of that she's deceptive. Whereas Monica, I think she's, you know, sort of like under the radar. She seems like maybe that she could be up to something. Whereas Kimmy, I think you're thinking a lot more what you see is what you get.
Right. So I think that that's why they trusted Kimmy on that. And they probably already had their lingering suspicions of Monica for, you know, all the reasons we've talked about, that she is somebody that you were probably watching a little more closely than certainly we got to see of Monica. So I think that trusting Kimmy in this, and who knows just how in with Jeremy and Steven Kimmy is to begin with. Kimmy is another one who, you know, for being such a big personality, is someone we haven't seen a ton of on the show yet. You know, this was really her coming out party. Interestingly enough, after the Varner vote, you know, Varner goes home and Kimmy comes out of her shell. If that's the transfer of power, if we lose Jeff Varner and we gain a super active Kimmy Kappenberg, that's very fun for this Australian outback.
I'm really excited for Kimmy 2.0. All right, let's do a couple more questions. Kerry Graveline says, it seemed like Wigglesworth didn't fight for herself. If she did, why would the edit not show it? But Spencer's plea. I have to say, I was a little disappointed in the edit tonight to have Monica all of a sudden be so visible in the start of the episode. And then it looked like it was going to be Kelly, but we never saw much of Kelly at all in the episode. Yeah. So I really just felt like from the moment that Bion lost, I said, okay, Monica is going to go. And it was disappointing because I think that from what ultimately happened with this 3-2-1, it was a very exciting vote to have. And maybe it just speaks to Kelly Wigglesworth not giving production anything, which we talked about going into this season of, is she going to be the person who is going to, I had hoped, is she going to be that mercenary who's yeah. going to play hard and not give production anything? Seems like she's more of maybe the bump on a log who is also not giving production anything, where it seems like she's going to work on the camp, work on the camp life, and go clamming and do whatever needs to be done around camp and play in the challenges. But she seems like she's not scheming, and also she's not talking much to production.
I think that that's a big piece of it. I think that Kelly Wigglesworth, who had a really big episode one, has been fairly quiet since then. And I think a lot of that has to do with, look, if we had a really great Kelly Wigglesworth story to tell, I think we'd be seeing it. And I think that a lot of that comes down to just the way that she talks to the camera. She's not really into that. It's not her thing. And she's very open about that in the interviews that she has given before the game. So I'm not surprised by that. In terms of disappointment with the edit, I do think that there came a point where it started to become really clear that I think Monica is out of here. I think Monica's in trouble. There's so much Monica in this episode. There's been so little Monica before. She has that really, you know, famous last words line before the immunity challenge wraps up, before Jeff sends them back to camp. She's like, I don't think there's anything wrong with going back to tribal council. You don't say that. You know, that's really just, you know, writing your epitaph prematurely. So I do think the writing was on the wall for Monica tonight. I thought that made it kind of interesting to watch, you know, being able to watch for, okay, so clearly Monica is getting burned, but how is she getting burned? It makes no sense for her to get burned. And once the 3-2-1 type of scenario started to come into fruition, it started to get really fun to watch. So I do hear that complaint about the editing. I think it was a little see-through tonight. I think it has its advantages, but you definitely had a strong feeling about halfway through the episode that this is a bad night for Monica, I think.
Okay, and then can I call out Spencer real quick for, as he voted for Kelly Wigglesworth, said, you invented the phrase, I didn't come here to make friends. And I kind of feel like the opposite was true of Kelly Wigglesworth. Would you say that Kelly Wigglesworth invented the phrase, I didn't come here to make friends? I kind of feel like that Kelly Wigglesworth 1.0 is her story is that I made friends.
Right. But I do think that that's a line of hers from Borneo. I think that that's something that she says very early on, where she's like, I'm not here for friends. I think it's like one of her, where she's like relaxing in a boat and just like being cocky to the camera. I do remember that. I feel like that's not her arc in season one. I think you're right. I think her arc in season one is that she got close to people.
So she did say it, though, you're saying.
Yeah, I do think
I owe an apology to the young lad. But yeah, that was not her story.
Just a deep cut reference is what it was.
Deep cut reference. Okay. Yeah. Let's do one or two more. Let's go to Christina, who says, hey, Rob and Josh, Bion quickly voted out one of their own. Do you think that this will come back to bite Jeremy, Fish, and Kimmy when it's time to merge?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a lot tonight already, just this idea. But what is your prediction? Plant your flag. Is this going to be something that Jeremy, Fishback, and Kimmy will look back on when their games are over? And are they going to say, man, we really should have gotten rid of Spencer that night, or man, we really should have gotten rid of Kelly Wigglesworth?
You think this could be like a Dan K. Susie moment?
Oh, man, Dan K. reference on the know-it-alls.
I do not think they look back and say, why did we vote out Monica? Yeah. I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I mean, it's possible if like Spencer is the person that ultimately flips on these guys and then is ultimately, but I don't think that that's necessarily going to be the undoing.
Sure. Fair enough. I agree.
Last question. What does Zach Kennedy have to say?
Zach Kennedy says, who gets the fishy / wiggly this week? How about Keith, since he won both challenges for his team? I haven't given many wigglies at that. As a reminder, I'll give these people a hug. I'll give Keith a hug. I'll give Keith Nail a bro hug, a bro chacho hug for his performance tonight.
Boy, isn't Keith Nail the guy you want handling the balls when the pressure is on? Like, I mean, if I had that decision, I'd say, you know what, Keith, take the balls. That's all you, Keith Nail. That's his area he excels in.
Signature move. Hand that nail mail all of the balls.
Yeah. That guy is the best survivor ever when it comes to any of these ball challenges.
He's great. He's excellent. Yeah, I think he's spends a lot. Forget Woo. I think he's the guy who spends all of his time at Chuck E. the Cheese. I think that that's how he trains for Survivor. Blam.
Yeah. Yeah. I was so happy yesterday when I got a happy birthday from Stacey Powell.
Oh my God. And happy belated birthday here on the podcast.
Oh, happy. Yes. Me and Abby Maria, we're like right next to each other on the calendar. All right.
Great job at being alive, Rob. It's good stuff.
Yes, we did it. JSS. Okay. Yeah. So then, Josh, we need a hashtag for this episode of the Know-It-Alls.
What do we got? I mean, hashtag Clamgate seems easy. That seems like a no-brainer.
Clamgate?
Yeah.
We got the anything with Kimmy?
Anything with Kimmy? You know, Kimmy Morrow, but I don't know if these Sons of Anarchy crossover is going to be too high.
Goodbye, Monica.
Goodbye, Monica.
Two inside. Okay. Yeah. Clamgate?
Clamgate, I think, is an easy one. Okay.
All right, there we go.
There you go.
We got so much coming up tomorrow. It's going to be a busy Thursday all around in the Survivorverse, because we've first got exit interviews with Mopa, Monica Padilla. Josh and I will each speak to her tomorrow. You can check that out, of course. Get all of Josh's stuff when you follow him on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. Then we're going to do the big podcast with T-Bird Cooper. Going to have our question links up on Facebook at it's facebook.com/RobHasAPodcast. And then I'm going to speak with the great Akiva Winokur. Get your voicemails in at robheadswebsite.com/voicemail 323-282-RHAP. Did we forget anything, Josh?
No, I think that's it. There's a lot to touch. And I'm curious, we didn't talk about Joe at all tonight. I'd really like to get your take on Joe. I'm sure you're going to talk it through on the voicemails. But Joe talking about how he's playing a much better game this time around than he was last time. What do we think about that? What's your hot take on that real quick?
I guess so. He hasn't been to tribal council again. Like Steven said tonight, like there's no better way to establish trust than, you know, you have to ultimately vote and you see where people lie. It's hard to say that anybody is playing a better game than anybody until we see a tribal council.
Yeah. He's playing the Super Joe game. And whether, I mean, if he's playing like in terms of like a technically better game so far, technically it's flawless. But in terms of that being something that's going to improve his standing than over last time, I guess the jury is still out.
And that being said, I don't think that Joe has made as many mistakes as he had made early on in Survivor Worlds Apart, where he's getting into it with Vince Sly over like a bunch of dumb stuff.
Sure. Agreed.
Okay. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for watching the Survivor Noah. I was looking forward to hearing your comments on robhasawebsite.com, and get ready for a busy Survivor Thursday coming up here. So have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye. Survivor Noah.